Well, welcome to The Easy Secret with Ann Sermons Gillis, sharing the principles of easy office. My name is Don Wells, and I am your host. And Ann Sermons Gillis is the founder of Easy Philosophy. She has been teaching this philosophy for 23 years. She's a spiritual teacher, personal growth coach, author, breath worker, and she has a master's degree in counseling and was the senior minister at Connection Church for 14 years. She's also happily married to Jim Gibson, and they reside with their dog Lucy in the Woodlands, Texas, in the outskirts of Houston, Texas. Hello there, Ann. How are you?
Hey, Don. I'm doing well. I want to just make one distinction, because so many people find this word a little not so easy to pronounce, and that is the word is easy-osophy, like philosophy, but easy-osophy. So I just wanted to make that distinction.
Great. Okay. So, well, we're looking forward to hearing what you're going to share with us today. So with no further ado, go ahead and let us know what you're going to be sharing with us.
Well, I am going to be talking about some things that I learned in my life. My life has been up with very good times and a lot of successes, and down with a lot of drama and problems and pain. But what I noticed that regardless of whether things were up or down, whether there was drama or pain, there always seemed to be a low level of suffering. And I started to examine that. What's going on? Why is it that this just doesn't relieve, regardless of the high states or my accomplishment as a person or the amount of money I make? What is going on? And so I began to look at what I call the principles of suffering. So I'll be talking about those today. And then also the antidote to that will be the principles of ease. And what is the real truth that goes beyond this human cultural belief in suffering? And then lastly, I'm going to talk about the easy-osophy practice, or tools for easier living. I do want to remind...
Sounds good.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm excited about it. Then also there will be time for questions and comments and answers at the end of the call.
All righty. Well, we're looking forward to that. All right. Well, thank you very much for letting us know what you're about to share with us. So I'll go ahead and step aside and let you share it with us.
Okay. So what are the principles or the characteristics of ego-driven suffering? Because the talk today is about making your life easier. And often, if we don't know the areas in which we're suffering, we don't know what it is to eliminate. And so ego-driven suffering is different than pain. Pain is something that we can have physically. Pain is something that we can have when we lose someone that's very close to us. Maybe someone abruptly dies. But suffering is different. Suffering is where we have a choice. And suffering is something that's systemic and endemic in our culture, and it can be changed. And I call that ego-driven suffering. It could be suffering, struggle, sacrifice, stress, and strain. I made up my own little word. I call a person who suffers about life a hardaholic. And a hardaholic practices the principles of struggle every day. It's easy to see someone else that is a hard, and that's an H-A-R-D, hardaholic, than it is to actually see where we live that out in our lives. But here's the primary belief of a hardaholic. That is that life is hard, you must suffer about it, and it will never change. So life is hard, you must suffer about it, and it will never change. If we take a look out into the field of our life, whether it be politics or whether it be healthcare, whether it be something about our body, our looks, our relationships, we live like this so often, and we call ourselves positive people, but we're operating from this subconscious belief system just that operates just like DOS on a computer. So the next idea in being a hardaholic is that my life is harder than yours, and I will prove it. And a lot of day-to-day conversations are about how difficult our individual story is. We think that suffering is glory, and we glorify it. So I'm going to try to convince you that my life is worse than yours. It's funny because both people walk away from that conversation feeling bad because somebody wants to win, and the win is that my life is worse than yours. My life is harder than yours. My life is more difficult than yours. I grew up with that. My sister could outdo everyone. I learned at the feet of the master. I learned how to talk about a hard, hard life. Another belief, and this is really an old one, and that is that it is spiritual to suffer. Spiritual to suffer. We've heard it, no pain, no gain. We've glorified suffering in religion. I mean, many of the Catholic churches have a crucifix with Jesus hanging on the cross. There's really at a subtle and subconscious level saying that a person that we set up and have glorified and deified suffered, and that's a good model. Very strange, I think. The next idea is that life is serious. Very serious. And I watch people do that in the spiritual movement. They practice their spirituality with kind of a sourness, and it's, I've just got to get it exactly right. And the sense, if I don't get everything perfect, I'm going to miss out of something, and my life is just going to be a wreck. So they take upon a spiritual practice, for example, meditation, find out they can't do that maybe very well, and so they go to something else and maybe take a course of study and go over it every day and get very fundamentalist about it. But we're too serious about our lives, our work. Gosh, all we have to do is say work and everybody's shoulders just get tighter. It's like we carry a burden around. And our belief is that work is hard. That the idea that having, if someone thinks about easy work, my work is really easy, they want to say, gosh, you know, I feel bad about even getting paid to do this. We think that work is hard. So I guess if we are miserable and we don't like things, we carry around a burden, then maybe we can get paid for it. Another belief in the suffering world is that you got to live in the real world. And that's almost like straighten up, stop being happy, don't laugh, just be very, very serious, the real world. And, of course, on the converse side of that, we know that some people do live in la-la land. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about this seriousness and difficulty that we place in every area of living. And also another aspect of that is that people will say, well, I live in the real world, and they're implying that the other person does not live in the real world. Another area of suffering, a way that we suffer, is unless you suffer, you are not good. I can remember arguing with people when they said I had an easy life, as if that made me somebody that was not a grown-up, somebody that was not knowledgeable, that I didn't know what I was talking about, that maybe I was a fool or I was naive or gullible. And the next idea in terms of suffering is, and this is a biggie, and that is the forgotten or hidden belief that life is a problem. Life itself is a problem, but we don't know that it's a problem. But we go about everything solving this problem that we don't know that we have a belief in that doesn't exist. And it's pretty crazy making because we get up looking for something that doesn't exist. And we project our own belief in a problematic reality into everything that crosses our path. And oddly enough, this gives us some kind of value in life, because then we have a challenge and we can be great for other people and solve their problems, or great for ourselves and solve our own problems. But life itself is not a problem. Suffering is a problem for us, but it's not life that's the problem. It's the suffering that we do about life that is the problem. And then the last idea about suffering, before I go into more, the principle of suffering, is that there is something missing. And we go on this quest for what it is that's missing. And we look and we look. We look for what is present with us, what is already there. It would be somewhat like if someone came to my house and knocked on the door and said, I need to have what you do. I want to go wherever this easy stuff is. Will you go with me? I've got a limousine out in the front door, and it's packed with everything that we need. It's got food. It's got water. We've got a driver. We've got a full tank of gas. And I want to go find this stuff that you got, this easy-osophy. I want to find a life in which I am relaxed and I live in a flow and it's more effortless. Will you please take me there? And my answer would have to be, you can't go there. It's really here. We can't go there. But so much of our lives are spent with this limousine in the front yard, trying to get ready for, packing the limousine up, polishing the limousine, doing everything that we can to get ready to go on this journey that's useless. It doesn't mean that we don't take action in our lives, but the action that we take in our life is based on our dharma, what is really the next right thing for us to do. We don't do those things because there's something missing. So it's important just to watch our consciousness and go, what? Yeah, no, there's not anything missing. And if we believe there's something missing, to just still the mind. So some more characteristics of struggle is that struggle is a path of the ego. And I define the ego as a part of our mind that just is not out for our best interest. And the ego is very self-centered in a selfish way and a selfless way, and it's the big story of me. Me, 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 me. Because that me that we focus on is one that is based on struggle, and it's really trying to get stuff. Now, struggle is really a concept, and it can be reversed. That's really cool. Struggle can be reversed. So I'd like to get into, I think I'm going to go on and do this part. Don, I know that our timing is a little bit.
Okay.
But I'm going to go on and go into this. Struggle can be reversed. So what are some of the things that cause struggle? And maybe just look at that a little bit more. And that is, duality causes struggle. And that is the idea that things are right and wrong, good and evil. When that is an operating system, there is a lot of struggling, because we're going back and forth from one end of that continuum to the other. We try to be very, very right, and when we try to be right and we're trying to be right, we end up being wrong constantly and going back and forth trying to prove ourselves. And this is very time-consuming and very energy-consuming. The same thing with good and bad, and that is trying to be good, and it absorbs so much energy until we rebel, and then we're very bad and do act out. Ego-driven struggle, as I've been talking about, is really an addiction, and it shows up like worry, stress, and emotional pain, because drama is a drug. It is a drug. Everywhere from when we open the news, when we open up our newspaper, when we look on television, when we watch the news, it is a drug. And struggle is based on perception. and we love our perception. Whenever we try to get anything from anyone, we create struggle. We're going to make a, just change the idea of getting from receiving. We're trying to get something from someone. We're trying to act a certain way, get enough accolades so that maybe we get approval, attention, affection, or trying to get taken care of. So we create struggle through trying to get something that only we can give to ourselves from someone else. And struggle is victim-centered. A victim is someone that really has the power to take action in him, in his or her life, but chooses not to. The victim stays stuck. And I'm not talking about the classic victim that maybe the world is talking about. I'm talking about a victim consciousness. Struggle is based on hopelessness, helplessness, and futility. And struggle is when we are upset with the way we're upset with things the way they are now. So it's resistance to what already is. These things can change. It takes a tremendous move of consciousness, maybe hitting the bottom or hitting the top and finding out there's an emptiness there, to be willing to move into an easier reality. Now, the principles of ease, wow, tremendous. The easy path is really life-centered. It's not event-centered. And when I say life, I mean the living presence, the passion of life. It's wisdom-based. It's not what is happening here and how can I control what's happening out here, how can I make it different. It's being present and being full of life and then letting the activity flow from that life. And ease, this is the great news. Ease is always present, and it's instantly available to everyone. If you've ever had a wreck, you may have had that experience of ease, or maybe a fall. There seems to be slow motion, and there's not this great fear, but there's this ease, this non-efforting reality as we're totally present. Because ease is always present. Now, everything that we do in our life can be easier if we've lived our lives with a deep-seated belief in struggle. Now, I'll just say, some people might say, well, what do you mean everything can be easier? And it's just, if we are looking toward the principles of ease, it's probably because there's some things that have been difficult in our lives, and based on that, then things can be easier. If things are already easy, then, of course, we won't be looking to get them easier because we'll just be having fun. So everything can be easier if the past has been based with this deep-seated belief in struggle, because everything that we do is going to reflect our consciousness of struggle and our belief in struggle. Another piece of good news is that ease is more powerful than struggle. Ease is not power over. Ease, and it is present. I've spent time meditating just on the word ease, just to become that embodiment of ease, and just to place the thought of ease and give it a place of honor in my consciousness, and to meditate and contemplate on that word ease. I believe that ease is appropriate to everything that we do, whether it's what we're thinking about, what we're doing, the way we hold our body while we're doing things, and in our relationships, how we communicate. Ease is appropriate to everything. It's a thought that we can keep front and center at any activity in our lives. Because really, we've heard the idea that positive thoughts create what kind of results, Don? Positive thoughts create what kind of results?
Positive results.
Right. And negative thoughts create what kind of results?
Negative results.
Right. And easy thoughts create what?
Easy results.
Easy results. There you go.
Did I get an A?
Yeah, you get an A.
Good.
We don't go that far. We just forget that the way that we're thinking produces our results. I mean, we seem to do that with prosperity thoughts create money, that healthy thoughts create health, but we don't think so much about easy thoughts create easy results. So ease is easy. So maybe in order to make changes in our lives, that it's easier than we thought. Because if we think life is difficult, then change is difficult. But suppose it's not difficult.
Right.
Suppose it's easier than we thought. I mean, would we be willing to be wrong about it being hard to change? Maybe so. There's no person. Go on. What are you going to say?
I just said, wow, because that was, that's an important point, is that, just thinking, just making easy thoughts your main thought, and instead of the conditioning that we have to focus on that it's going to be a struggle.
Well, because the problem is that if we believe that life has to be hard and we have this addiction to struggle going on in the background that we don't know what we have, it doesn't matter what we do to our prosperity consciousness. It doesn't matter how many sales techniques we get. It doesn't matter how many relationship courses we take. Until we change that belief and that honoring of struggle and suffering, and we start focusing on things being easier, none of those things can be successful, because they'll always be fraught with struggle, stress, sacrifice, and strain. And the good thing is, of course, everything is not going to be perfect in our lives. But so, it's like you said earlier, we have to welcome everything to the table. If I do make a mistake, certainly not to make that anything difficult, but just to make that something very easy. I mean, you've talked to me about that, which I think is great. And that is, the mistake is, Don and I talk about selling, and it's like the mistake is part of the selling. Just it's not a problem.
Right.
So acceptance is one of the keys to ease, accepting what is, whether it's a mistake or whether it's the way somebody else speaks to us. It's not a sense of giving up. It's acceptance is just acknowledgement of what is without having any kind of emotional garbage attached to it. So I'm going to briefly go over some of the ideas that we can use to implement the easy practices. What to do. These may be something you might want to write down. The first easy practice is to ask questions. Ask questions. It's a call to consciousness. How would I be doing this if it were easy? How would I make this simpler? Who am I? It's just a question. When we let thoughts just go on and on and on, they tend to drag us down, but when we stop and ask a question, it stops that endless flow of struggle. The next easy Asivi practice would be looking out for the heartaholic sigh. That, and it goes like this. It goes, heartaholic sigh. It just really gives you away. It's like, oh my gosh, everything is just so bad. But when you have when you have that sigh, know that you are having an HARD, a heart attack. The next idea is really to stay present. Stay present with yourself throughout the day. An easy way to do that, and just snippets throughout the day, can be, here I am, just tuning in and saying, stopping for a moment, here I am, here I am, here I am. All through the day, maybe 1,000. I mean, we've got snippets of time all through the day, and so this gets the mind quiet, and also helps get us in our body and out of our heads. The next easy Asivi practice is to use the 8-word miracle mantra. I know a lot of people have heard this, but it's everything can be easy, or at least easier. And that's something that we can think throughout the day. Everything can be easy, or at least easier. Easy if it's ego-driven, and easier if it's some real difficult situation. And we can make it easier by relying on our inner strength, or we can call friends and help and have them listen to us and be with us through our difficult times. The next practice is, of course, to take care of your body. That has to be. The body, we take care of our body through what we eat, we take care of our body through our emotions and taking care of those, and through our breath. So those ideas, I don't want you to think that there have to be a lot of ideas on taking care of yourself. You can take any one of the four things that I mentioned and use those, just using the 8-word miracle mantra for a month, and see how it totally turns the world around. So it's not so difficult to change. It's just bringing the idea and concept of ease front and center in everything that we do. You got anything to say before I summarize, Don?
No, that was wonderful. I'm looking forward to hearing the summary.
Okay. Well, we live in a culture that worships suffering, and we're really highly influenced by that suffering. And it's so prevalent that we don't examine or question it, and we suffer over routine things that are not difficult. And so the first part is that we have to recognize when we are suffering, whether it's a form of worry or dread or doing a task or whining, so that we can move beyond that. If we don't know that we're in it, we certainly can't move beyond that. The second idea is that there are a set of principles and ideas that can liberate us from these ego-driven suffering and struggle. And that knowledge, that body of knowledge, is easy-osophy. And that ease is always present, and it is like a presence in life, and that is ease, not efforting grace. And lastly, I shared four tools: the 8-word miracle easy-osophy mantra, the call to consciousness, staying present throughout the day, and calling yourself conscious by saying, I am here, and just stopping throughout the day. Oh, and I also did mention, and to ask questions. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell, Don.
Nice. Nice job.
Yeah, so it doesn't take a long time to get these ideas across because they're simple and easy, and they're readily available to implement now. But there'll never be another time in which life will be easier. It can never be easier in the future. We can only become that embodiment of ease now.
And we're about to have a question and answer from anyone?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering. Go on.
Go ahead. I was going to say, yeah, anyone that has any questions or or comments about what Anne has spoken about, please feel free to speak up.
Okay, hi, this is Judy.
Hi, Judy.
Hi. Yeah, on that, well, you know me. And the thing that happens with me, I don't think I still believe that I still have the belief that, you know, you're good because you suffer. I mean, even though I grew up with that belief in the Catholic Church. But I still have that automatic reaction to victimization. Until I talk to you, of course, and you remind me where I just went. But it seems to be a biological, I guess, an addictive part of me that goes there right away to the victim, you know, even if it's something I heard on the news or the television or, you know, that's happening in the world that I feel that is unjust, I automatically go to that place where I'm the victim.
Is that a comment or is there a question in there?
It's a comment.
Yeah, okay.
It's a comment, and it's something that I'm still really, I'm not really conscious of it when I'm doing it. But as soon as I'm reminded that I'm doing it, it's, good, I can stop doing that now because I have a choice now. It's like I almost don't have a choice before I realize I have a choice.
Right. And, of course, one of the ways that we can tell that that's going on is that we feel bad. And, and you know, I always say go to consciousness as fast as possible. So that means that if you're having an upset because you're watching television about something that's happened to someone, and that is to get in touch with your emotions as a sensation and be really present with what's going on and turn off the dialogue.
Because one thing in particular hit me the other night when I was watching Bill Moyers. Oh, I shouldn't say that. Anyway, I started crying, and I started feeling sick inside, and it wasn't about me at all, but something was triggering that emotion in me. That, I don't know, poor me thing, or we're all being victimized thing. I don't know, but it was there.
Yeah, and I don't think that, I mean, I think it's okay that there would be things that are triggered. I think that we have compassion, and I don't want to mix this up with saying that when we cry or when we have sensations that's inappropriate.
Yeah.
I just know that the more conscious that I get, the easier it is for me to deal with things in a way that doesn't wipe me out.
Yeah.
So I'm more present. I think I remember that I never wanted to go to India, and I didn't think I could handle the poverty. And I heard a lot of people say that, or go to certain different places in the world where it looked like people had hardships and starvation and difficulty. But I noticed when I did end up going to those countries, India being one of them, that even though I had compassion toward those people, it wasn't like it pulled me down. It would almost be like my guilt for being alive while they were in pain was what I thought would pull me down. But by the time I actually made it there, first time in the 80s, it just wasn't present. I think that the suffering, a lot of it comes from guilt. I don't think it comes from genuine compassion, but that doesn't discount that genuine compassion is real. And it's a part of what makes us so precious and special and joined with each other, you know, with compassion.
So you think I should quit examining why I'm crying about it and just let it be that I am and just, you know, and not just let it
go? Yeah, because that's such an easy tendency. Whatever we do that is not in line with our perfectionistic ideal model of what a me should be, you know, I've got all this perfect, a me should not cry at this, a me should always, when somebody's mean to us, we should always be very enlightened in our response. We have all this list of how me should be, and to try to drop that list and just be present with it. Isn't this interesting? I'm crying.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
Okay. Thank you, Ann.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Judy.
Well, thanks, Ann. So you want to remind us again on how to get in contact with you?
Yes, let me say you can call me at 281-419-1775 or go to anngillis.com. Also, I'd like to invite you to sign up for my newsletter. You can do that at theeasysecret.com. That's T-H-E-E-Z and then secret.com. You can sign up for my newsletter, read my blog. There's also lots of information on my website to support the principles of ease. I'd like to also mention that I have three other seminars coming up next week, same time. There'll be easy relationships. If you know anyone that could use easier relationships, then join us next Wednesday. And the following Wednesday, easy money. Talk about our relationship with money and how to get out of the wheel of suffering with money. And then the following week, easy body. So I hope everyone can join us next week for this series on easyosophy and the way it relates in our life.
Nice. We'll be looking forward to that. And I want to thank everyone that has come to the call and for those that will be listening to the recorded version of the call, for listening in with us.
Okay, great. Thanks.
All right.
Take care.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.